So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that in the material universe, there is an ocean of tears. And that ocean is created by the crying of all living entities seen in this material world, because it's a very disappointing place. We want to live eternally and be with our loved ones forever, but it's not to be. We're being moved on constantly, and therefore in the Srimad Bhagavatam we're given solace by the great devotees and the Lord himself teaching us about the nature of this world. I come in with great hope for happiness in the material world. But in Bengal there's an aphorism that I built this beautiful house for my enjoyment and now it is burnt to the ground. That's the whole aphorism. That whatever I build here, eventually it becomes burned and I'm left with ashes. And therefore, we cry in this world. And it's very difficult to avoid. Nobody can avoid this situation because there's very strong connection. The heart is connected to our loved ones, and impossible to avoid this feeling of having a very, very, very heavy heart. Even we hear in the Bhagavatam, after the Kurukshetra war, that Yudhishthir was inconsolable. Yudhishthir, the greatest devotee, after the battle at Kurukshetra, so much loss of life, and then the devotees came together, Yudhishthir, the family members, and Lord Krishna personally came. And they went to the Ganga and they performed the last rites. These kinds of ceremonies are meant to give us some consolation, to see that we've done what we can to sanctify the passing of whoever's left us in this world. And it's for us on this side who are still left to grapple with the fact that we've lost a loved one. So, what to do? We're here in this world, and Krishna says, along with our birth, death is certain. And for one who has been born, death is certain. One who has died, birth is certain again. This is the process of samsara. One thing leads to another. It's moving constantly. And therefore, Krishna comes and gives us instructions how to become sober amidst this changing from one body to the next. In fact, he says, Dehino smin yata dehe koma aranyobaram jara tata dehantara praptir. Dhiras tatra nimuyate. Namuyati means muyati means bewildered. So he said that someone who's become dhira, or undisturbed by the churning of the material nature, and specifically in this verse he's talking about how the soul moves from boyhood to youth to old age and then changes into another body at death. A person who's become trained in knowledge and who has become stoic, even though there are many changes that go on in this world, and who has achieved some realization of the difference between the body and the self, then is undisturbed, is not bewildered when there's a change from one body to the next. So Krishna is advocating this, that this is what we must achieve, this kind of dhira, this being undisturbed as we change from one body to the next, or as those around us change from one body to the next. And Krishna says, Matra Sparsha Shtakonteya Shitoshna Sukhatu Kada Agama Payino Nityas Tamstatik Shashvabharata. That everything around us changes. Nothing will stay the same. Matra Sparsha Shtakonteya. That the body and our experience of the world is constantly changing. We're experiencing happiness and distress, and it's just like winter and summer seasons. They come and then they go, and they're constantly changing. Matra sparsha shtakonteya shitoshna sukadukada. Sometimes it's cold. Last time we came here, it was hot. I was remembering when we were getting out of the car, and when we came to your house last time, it was hot, and now it's cold. And so Krishna recommends that we have to tolerate. Tamstatikshashvabharata. He tells Arjuna, who is in this horrible situation, facing his relatives, having to fight against his guru and many loved ones on the other side. And he was practically inconsolable himself. He dropped his bow on the battlefield, and he lost his composure, even though he is a great warrior. So we see the power of Vishnu Maya. See the power of Vishnu Maya. That great warrior like Arjuna becomes affected. Then we see Yudhishthira and also Kunti. Kunti prays to the Lord before he leaves for Dwarka, and she's saying, please sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining in his commentaries that very difficult to separate our feelings from our loved ones. I know in my experience, when loved ones in my family have passed away, especially my mother and my father, even though studying the philosophy for so many years, I was in Vrindavan when my father passed away. He was in California. Nirkula was watching over him, and I got the phone call. I always wondered what it would be like when my parents left. I used to ask devotees that, what do you do? Because I was very attached to them, and I felt very close to my parents. And so even though I was, you know, I left them when I was young for a long time to join the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we had rekindled our relationship. I mean, it was never really broken except for that I went away. And then, you know, I wondered, how does one tolerate such a thing? Losing a loved one practically was inconceivable to me. Even though I was studying the philosophy and hearing so many things and practicing Krishna consciousness for so long. So I would ask devotees if their parents were still alive. And sometimes they say, no, you know, I lost my mother or my father. And I ask them how they tolerated such a thing. And Krishna recommends, you know, you have to learn to tolerate this. And they were giving me various answers, but I had to find out for myself. Everyone does. How you'll tolerate such things, such changes in life. And I remember when he did pass away, when I was in Vrindavan. Nirkula called me, it was 2 in the morning, and told me that, actually she didn't even say anything, she said, Hare Krishna, and, you know. And then I was just thinking that I know the philosophy, why do I have such a heavy heart now that my father's passed away? And I remember that the devotees around me who were especially caring at that time, they could have just said, why don't you just tolerate and why don't you be Dira? But no, I remember it was Dhruva and Samapriya were staying downstairs from me, godbrother and godsister. And when Samapriya found out, you know, she's a Jewish mother, very, you know, big heart and everything like that. She came over and hugged me and said, oh, you know. and other devotees too, God brothers, others came over and gave consolation in a very real way. And I always remember how much I appreciated that. That was necessary. And I saw that there's two parts to our existence. I had this realization. You know, we have our spiritual realization, and still there's we have our nature as humans, and you can't just drop that off, and it's not recommended either that we just become hard-hearted. In fact, I learned a lot from that passing in my father and seeing the reaction of others around me and my own reaction. And similar when my mother passed away, I felt this heavy heartedness that wouldn't go away. And what to speak of death is such a drastic thing. And there's nothing more drastic in this world. And throughout the scripture, it's consoling us. There are statements, Deha Patra Kalatradeshu Atmasainu Sasatsapi Tesham Pramatognitanam Pashyanapina Pashyati. That although, it says, although we see it, we don't see it. Although we can understand it through Shastra and we, you know, we can theorize and philosophize and see, you know, you're not your body, still Pashyanapina Pashyati. It's very difficult to see. Even though we see it, we don't see it. And so, these changes that we go through in life, they affect us very deeply. No doubt about it, even if we're practicing Krishna consciousness. And however, as we go through these different periods of our life and changes, loved ones passing on unexpectedly, and we continue to practice our Krishna consciousness, Krishna will fortify us and give us the strength and realization to understand how these things are happening, why they're happening. It actually opens our heart, too, to see that others are suffering wherever we go, that I must be compassionate, you know, to others, because other living entities who are in this world are going through similar kinds of experiences, no matter who they are or what kind of situation they're in, they suffer when these things happen. And ultimately, the only solution is to take shelter of Krishna. The Shastra is telling us that we're swimming in an ocean here. Samasritaye parapalava plavam mahatparam punya yasho murare bhavam budhir vatsaparam param 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 yadviparam natesham. This verse is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which says that Krishna is the shelter of all the creation, and he's the killer of the Mura demon, he's therefore called Murari, and that he can give shelter to anyone. Samasritaye parapalava plavam. His lotus feet are like lotus petals. His feet are like lotus petals. And there's nowhere else to take shelter in this world where there's danger at every step. Param param yad viparam. Viparam means there can be a misstep at any time in this world. And so we should take shelter of Krishna. And this is the... this is the only solace, ultimately, the only shelter. So, the heart also is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam as the seat of consciousness, and also the heart sometimes is described in this when I'm in this material life, it becomes steel framed, it becomes very hard. And devotional service requires the heart to melt. Druta chitta uchar. It means that the heart becomes softened. So, as we undergo the different kinds of changes in this world, it's important to see that how Krishna is protecting us and how everything is his arrangement, and that ultimately we're in his hands. Everything's moving by his arrangement. The devotees take shelter of this understanding that whatever is happening to me in this lifetime is by the arrangement of Krishna, one way or another. And as we take shelter of Krishna more and more, we become exclusively dependent on him in all kinds of circumstances, which takes practice, seeing how everything's being supplied by Krishna, ultimately, that I can't protect myself, and surrendering to Krishna, then gradually allowing my heart to melt in Krishna consciousness and not be steel framed. And as the heart melts and we take shelter of Krishna, then we can experience real happiness in life. So the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is a simple prayer asking Krishna, please engage me in your service. Please reveal yourself to me so that I can take shelter of you. And this is our shelter. Krishna has appeared in his name. And in any circumstance, whatever we have to endure in this lifetime, we should go on with the process of taking shelter of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And as we do, through all the different changes and the travails that we have to undergo in this lifetime, then through a complete life, going through all the different stages of life, we'll gain perspective and also we'll become mature in Krishna consciousness. And this is necessary. There are so many different things that we have to endure in this lifetime. And the Sri Upanishad says that when we cultivate Krishna consciousness side by side with avidya, that means that I'm accustomed to avidya, I'm accustomed to the troubles that come along with this material world because I'm already fully entrenched here. So this is what I'm describing, that there is always some kind of misery in this material world, separation from those we love or from the things that we have. And so that's inevitable. And it's not that we won't suffer just because we're taking shelter of the process of Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, vidyam cha vidyam chayas tadvedo vayam saha avidyayam ritum tirtva vidyayam ritum ashnite. One who can cultivate the process of nescience and transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So the only recourse is that although I'm already in the waves of this material nature and I'm going to experience these difficulties, I must at the same time continue my Krishna consciousness to whatever degree I can, because that combination, the Sri Upanishad is saying, as I continue to cultivate Krishna consciousness, there's a profound way in which the heart opens and the Krishna consciousness enters within the heart and it begins to melt the heart. Side by side, along with these experiences we have, these deeply emotional experiences that shake us to the core, as we experience those, we realize we do have a heart. We're not nothing. We actually exist. We have these emotions. And we can see how deeply we can feel, actually, when these things happen. And side by side, as we take shelter of Krishna and we cultivate atma-tattva, knowledge of the soul and of the spiritual world, Krishna's telling us, as we suffer in this material world, that there is a spiritual world where there is no change, where we don't have to endure these things. And that combination of our experience in the material world and the experience of Krishna consciousness by chanting the holy names, hearing the Bhagavad Gita, associating with the devotees, gradually these things fuse together so that we have a complete realization of our nature as sentient beings, as feeling beings, and that emotion is gradually transferred to our relationship with Krishna. And there's no getting around that. because that's where we are. That's where we're starting from. We're born into this world, and I had a realization with my mother especially. You know, when we're born, we have an umbilical cord, all of us. And when the baby first comes out of the womb, when he or she takes his or her first breath, the umbilical cord collapses because no longer dependent on the mother physically. But that umbilical cord is still there psychically. It's always connected. It's a subtle way. We have a subtle body. We have a connection to the mother and to the father to some degree. But there is a very strong connection that we have to in our relationships in this world. So it's not insignificant. We can't just sweep them away with a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, we have to experience these things. That we'll go through them. However, as we continue to cultivate Krishna consciousness and understand that we also have an umbilical cord to the spiritual world. It's just, we've just lost it for now, and somehow we've become entangled in this world. We can realize that, and it's just as emotional. It's just, the emotions are just as intense, more intense, in our connection with Krishna in the spiritual world, but it can't be severed. So nitya nitya sambandha prakritish cha paraivasa. The Brahma Samhita says that we have an eternal kinship with the Lord. That connection is always there. So that is the great search of life, that we have to revive that eternal connection that we have, that very intimate connection we have with Krishna. It's not some wispy, indescript kind of relationship. It's a very very intimate relationship that we have with Krishna. We've only forgotten it. And we've been diverted into this material world, and we still have the same emotions. We are sentient. Means we feel. We feel. So now, the great goal of life is to somehow or other tolerate these great changes of life, these inconveniences, inconceivable sorrows that come upon us, and as we cultivate Krishna consciousness, transfer that emotion and that connection back to our real connection with Krishna. And then, as that becomes more prominent, we are not unfeeling for people in the material world or those who are suffering in the material world. We don't shake it off. It's false. It's just a dream. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Aupam Yena Sarvatra, that such a person, a perfect yogi, actually has more compassion for people, has more understanding for people suffering in this world. Not that I'm above it all, therefore I don't care for people in this world. No, he has more appreciation for what they're going through. But at the same time, there's an emergence of a dependence on Krishna and taking shelter of Krishna, and then an awakening of real emotion for Krishna in our family, in the spiritual world. In this material world, even Hiranyakashipu, after the death of Hiranyaka, came and spoke to his family members. And several things he told them to appease them. He said that we're all travelers in this world. And just as travelers sometimes meet in an inn, and they have a cold drink together, and they become friends, and they talk for some time, and then they get up and they go out their separate directions. One goes south, one goes north, east, west, and they don't see each other again. He said, similarly, we all come together in families, in societies, nations, and such. And for some time, we associate, and then we become attached. It's the nature of the soul to become attached. That's what we do. And then everyone gets up and moves around to another place, and we become disturbed. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's explained that when one becomes fully attached to Krishna, then when Krishna's away from that devotee's vision, he or she feels like they had been given the greatest jewel and then lost it. You ever lose something that was really valuable to you, like a jewel? and then, you know, you go crazy looking for it. Where did it go? And you can't stop thinking about it because you just lost it. So devotees are like that. They're intensely thinking about Krishna and attached to him in that way. And so we, through the process of Krishna consciousness, of chanting Hare Krishna with attention and love, we'll awaken that original connection that we have with Krishna, that original sentiment that we have for Krishna. And that is the goal of life, to have that revival of relationship with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in such a situation, we actually become fulfilled. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described by, it is described by Karbhajana Muni in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us, what he calls abhishtadoham. That is the ultimate fulfillment of our heart, what we really want, and that we can't get in this world through any kind of adjustment. Just can't quite get it. And in the meantime, we suffer so many different reverses and losses. But through following the process of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can get this abhishtadoham, the fulfillment of what our innermost desire, what we really want. So this is our only hope, to continue on in whatever capacity we can to remain connected to Krishna, especially through the process which is passed down to us through the great acharyas who also have compassion for us and understand what we're going through. That's why Veda Vyas takes the trouble to write down what he writes down, just to appease us, to give us solace in the midst of this struggle that we're going through. And the great sages dedicate their lives simply to distribute that knowledge. Why? Because they know that people are suffering in this material world, and there's no alternative for their happiness other than to take shelter of this knowledge and the process. So we are, that's what we're doing. We're all doing that. And we have to help each other to come through all these periods of life. The Devotee Association is meant for embracing one another through all the difficult times we have to go through the different changes. It's mentioned by Rupa Goswami, Guhyam Akyati Prichyati. There's a way in which we should confidentially reveal our hearts to the devotees, and we should hear them confidentially reveal their hearts. I have friends in Krishna consciousness with whom I have these exchanges on a regular basis, and especially in times when I feel distraught or under great pressure, or have deep questions, I take shelter of those godbrothers especially, and we talk for long periods of time, and from that there's some solace. So that's devotee association too. This is part of the process of becoming a whole person, a whole spiritual person, not tipped over by the material world, but also not thinking that it's simply inconsequential, and dealing with it by step by step, by taking shelter of the devotees, taking shelter of the process of Krishna consciousness, and coming gradually, to a realization that I can depend on Krishna. It's not an ordinary thing to attain this, but it is the goal of life, and it does give us complete satisfaction. So that's what the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is for. It's for rare souls who have realized that it is the duty of everyone, it is our purpose for taking birth to go back home, back to Godhead. And devotees are compassionate. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kupa sindhavyevacha patitanam pavani rubhaisyavivyodhanurmaha. They're described as desire trees. They live to fulfill the desires of others, and they can do so because they have deep realization about what the purpose of life is. So these are a few random comments I have now that I'm here, just thinking about this seventh month period of time since Lokendra has gone. And does anybody have any comment or reflection or a question? You have a question?
No, okay. Why is really liked it that like how we can use the material experience. So many days we are like hearing that material, this is material, this is not. It's like it's going to destroy any time. But like how those experiences are important. That's pretty nice. I really liked it that how they help us to go closer to the teaching realization.
Hearing about Srila Prabhupada's life, I've often marveled at how he talked about some of the struggles he went through when he took vanaprastha, and he wasn't sure if he should take sannyas or not, and his spiritual master was coming to him in dreams and calling him, and he said, I was horrified. And after he took sannyas, which took some trouble, because it wasn't just like, oh, I'll take sannyas now. It's a big deal, these changes of life. You know, you're not sure, should I, shouldn't I? And, you know, Srila Prabhupada asked various godbrothers advice. What do you think? What do you think? They gave various opinions, and he finally came to one godbrother who was very sure and said, yes, you should. Here's the evidence. This is why. And he did it. But after he took sannyas, Prabhupada says this, that one day he was by himself walking along a footpath, and he was... There was a cow with really long horns, and you know, you got to watch out for the cows when you walk by them. I saw a man right outside the ashram I'm staying in one morning. You know, he walked too close to a cow, and she just swung her head, and he was really injured. And Prabhupada had that same thing happen on a footpath. A cow swung her horns, and he was injured severely. And he said, I was lying on the footpath. I had just taken sannyas. And I was thinking, what is this? That's what he said. Those were his words. What is this? And so, you know, it's Krishna gives, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the troubles devotees go through on their path back to Godhead, these are sometimes compared to, you know, lovers. They might scratch each other or something like that. And someone says, oh, you're scratched, you're injured. But actually... For the devotee, there's a feeling that, no, that's not really a scratch. Or he says that there's great darkness before the light comes, and you appreciate the light even more at that point. And in the life of, you know, great acharyas, we also see that the path is replete with all kinds of experiences for toleration and for finding... one's way to the, you know, to Krishna's lotus feet. Yeah, thank you for your comment. Other questions? Or a reflection, something that we talked about so far. Yeah, Shankar.
Somewhere in Prabhupada's purport he was saying that a devotee has such a strong sense of duty that he's not even disturbed by a death of a most dear relative, and he really sticks to his duty. And also in Mauritius, you know, Prabhupada's kind of posed with that question by one doubter saying, well, why is Arjuna lamenting, on the death of his son Abhimanyu on the battle? And Prabhupada said, it's natural to be affected by the loss of a family member. But it was to his credit that he didn't give up his duty. He went on and continued to fight. I was wondering if you have any other further comments about that.
Yeah, and that is that our duty and our service is the greatest solace. Your seva will save you. Because it's something that, it's our lifeline to Krishna. And throughout our life, if we're given service, one thing is, if we're given service, this is coming from Krishna. It never should be taken for granted and think, well, you know, I could quit my service because I can get more later on or something like that. If we get a little service, we should know that this is coming. This is Krishna's special arrangement. and we should take advantage of it. This is how we actually advance in devotional service. Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitya itan brahmapuya yakalpate. By seva, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that if you constantly do your seva, you'll rise above the three modes of material nature, and you'll come to the level of Brahman. This is Krishna's words. So, in times of great disturbance, emotional disturbance, the one thing that we can do is take shelter of our service. I might have mentioned this the other day, but I remember when Prabhupada left the planet, and I was engaged in regular service going to LaGuardia Airport in New York and distributing books. And I had a spot that I stood on every day, and I distributed books in that spot for hours. And then I had a partner. We'd drive back and forth to that airport in a station wagon. And after Prabhupada left, everything looked so bleak, and we had no idea, you know, what was going to happen next. I mean, we had this feeling. It was like an unknown. And the devotees had been up all night, crying, having kirtan, having a big feast, and nobody slept. I didn't sleep except for maybe an hour. And then Pragosh came and got me and said, Vaisheshika, we have to go out today. So we got ourselves together, we got in the car, we drove out to the airport, and I remember stepping onto the floor of the airport, and as soon as I touched the spot where I distributed, I felt this ecstasy come over me, and I thought, I'll never be separated from my spiritual master because he gave me some service. And if I do it, then I won't be separated. And our service to Krishna always keeps us connected wherever we are. So as we go through these changes, the death of a loved one, or whatever it is, the greatest changes in life, if we go on and continue with our service, whatever the situation is, this gives us a lifeline, and it also allows us to see that Krishna is always present with us in our life. So the seva and the doing our duty is very important. Do you have more realization about it? You'd like to say?
No.
Thank you for bringing it up. It was a really appropriate and nice point. What other things? Yes.
One thing, when you mentioned Yudhishthira Maharaj and his lamentation, and then later on, in a conversation it comes up, what is the greatest truth, something like that, and mm-hmm. Yudhishthira Maharaj answers. We see death every second, and it's all around us, but when it comes to the death of loved ones, we can't really take it boldly, because we're still in this material body when those things come up. But what gives us solace is the spiritual aspect, because soul is eternal. But when we go into the material platform, that's where the sorrow starts. So we have to kind of boldly accept that's what it is to know. That's what I remember. Mm. Mm.
Thank you. Yes,
you mentioned about the service, taking shelter of the service.
Yeah.
In many situations, if somebody doesn't have a spiritual master, or if you don't really know, how do we know what is our service and what is our duty?
Well, if you have some service, you have some service. I mean, somehow or other, a devotee gives you some. We get, service from our association with devotees. That's what devotees do, is they help others get connected to Krishna. Just in a practical way, whatever kind of service we've been given, we should take that as Krishna's arrangement. And you had your hand? There's a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Kala Krishnadas traveling with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and while he's with Mahaprabhu, he became attracted away from Mahaprabhu's association by some gypsies. And they enticed him to come to their camp. And there were these women and all kinds of things going on there. And so Mahaprabhu realized that his servant had been stolen away. And he went there and he grabbed him. The Bhattaharis, they came after Mahaprabhu, and they were actually impaled by their own weapons. No one can attack the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it's understood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu grabbed him by the hair and brought him back to his service. And then when he got back to Jagannath Puri, he called a little meeting with some of the devotees, and Kali Krishnadas was there, and Mahaprabhu said that, well, just see the character of this man, that, you know, he came with me and he was my servant and then he ran away, being attracted by some Bhattahari gypsies. And he said, I have no more service for him. He's out, as far as I'm concerned. And Krishnadas started crying, and Mahaprabhu just got up and left the room. And then the devotees, headed by Nityananda and several others, got together and they conspired to get him service back. They said to Mahaprabhu, they came back to him later and they said, we have a need for someone to go up to Navadvip and tell everyone that you're back from your tour of South India. Can we send someone? And Mahaprabhu knew what they were up to, but he just consented and said, yes, do whatever you like. So they picked Kali Krishnadas, said, okay, you're in, get going, you know, get up there. He was a big hero because he was the one who got to go back and tell that Mahaprabhu was back. And this is the preoccupation of devotees to help others get some service. Jayananda, I remember, he was our revered senior devotee, one of the revered senior devotees in the San Francisco temple when I joined. He was my bhakti leader and such. And I observed how he was always engaging people in service. In fact, he was famous for this, that, you know, he would be out in public in a parking lot somewhere working on the Rathyatra carts or near the San Francisco temple, and they needed assembly every year. And, you know, people would walk by and kind of look and say, what's going on? And he would say, you know, I'm hammering this here. Could you help me? And, you know, they'd come over, and 2 days later, they'd be shaved up. You know, because he had a way of kind of like, here, now this, now hold that. Now this, you know, and after a while, like, what is this thing anyway? And he'd pull them in. So devotees do that, you know. That's what we do when we go out, engage people in service. We want to see them do a little service, because the devotees know that's the lifeline to Krishna. They did some service, now it started, now they're going to go back to Godhead. That's the feeling of the devotees. So that's the benefit of being with Vaishnavas. That's why they're called desire trees. They're always giving us some service to do to connect us to Krishna. And that's what in the spirit, that's what goes on in the spiritual world. In Goloka, it's described how the gopis they always want the others to come in and have service for Krishna, personal service. They're arranging ways that the other people can come in, the other servants can come in and be closer to Krishna. Not that they're trying to hog everything and, you know, push everyone out of the way and only us, we're the only ones. Mm-hmm. But their mood is, go outside, bring more people in. And many years ago, Rameshwar was writing about the mood of book distribution and said that it's the mood of the gopis. And someone objected. They say, you've gone too far. Now this is Sahaja. And so they wrote to Prabhupada to settle the matter. And the letters there on public record, they said, you know, Rameshwar is saying that this book distribution, going out, you know, giving people chance to do service and bringing them back in, this kind of thing, this is the mood of the gopis. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is correct. He wrote back, this is the mood of the gopis. That's what goes on in the spiritual world. So, if we get around devotees, they'll give us some service, and we should take advantage of it, and then who knows how it will grow from there, but it will be fortified more and more. Some devotees hold on to their service, and after a while, they're noted for that. You know, that's the person who never left. There's one Mataji in the Berkeley Temple. When I joined in 1973, she was there doing her service. I go back in 2011, she's there doing her service. Very rare. You know, most temples around the world, you don't recognize anybody. From the old Vyasa Puja books, you can see who was in the temple in these certain years. And you go back to, this one's not here, that one's not there, that one moved to Australia, this one's gone. You know, the people who have been in the temple since the day they joined and just kept doing their service, you can count on, you know, one or two hands maybe from around the world. And they become famous for that. In Mayapur, Jnanivas is famous because he just stayed in Mayapur and did his service. And it doesn't matter what service you do, even if it's a little service, but you just keep doing it, after a while it'll become famous. That's what devotees are famous for, doing their service and just being steady. So, I don't know, whatever way you can get it, get some service and then hang on to it for dear life, because it's your Savior will save you. Okay. Yeah, yes.
I really like the point that you made about you know, how Prabhupada, when he was after he had taken sannyas, how, you know, there is sometimes there is this feeling of bewilderment or anxiety over what, you know, what's going on in life. I personally feel that there are so many glories of Prabhupada that inspires me, but also when I'm feeling challenged, then Prabhupada's struggles also give me so much strength, because then you see that it's very real. But sometimes we can, you know, see them as being like superheroes, and that they're not capable of human emotions. Mm-hmm. And then if you find it difficult to relate to that, because then you just don't see your situation as being connected to that. But when we see that they're like Maharaj Yudhishthira felt it, and Prabhupada felt it, then you can understand that. In some way, my situation is also related.
Mm.
We can derive a lot of great strength. So
it's
I really
very
appreciated
nice
that point.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Thank you. Really nice. What other things? Yes. Question.
Is it something that, like, once we start our devotional or spiritual, you know, service, or we take this path of spiritual life, and devotees get like more suffering, kind of, I mean, that's what I was thinking about it, that like, it's like we are saying to Krishna, pick me, and he picked you, and then he said, okay, let's see how much strength you have. Is it kind of like that, or it's like everyone's karma and everyone is suffering?
Well, yeah. Could you all hear her question? You could all hear? Well, this is noted in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Narada Muni. Narada Muni's, you know, talking to the Pandavas, and he's saying, you know, what's up with this? you've Krishna is your messenger, practically. He's so intimate with you. He's your, you know, like, what isn't he to you? You know, he comes to your house and just does service for you, because you've conquered him by your love, but you suffered more than anybody. How are we supposed to understand this? Yeah, and so going back to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives three reasons why devotees suffer like that. One is that they're not actually suffering in a way, because they've taken so much shelter of Krishna that, as I mentioned before, you know, there's some wound that was given by a lover, and then someone says, you know, you're injured, and it's like, no. You know. And also, he said, another thing is that this external, you know, appearance that the devotees are really suffering, it keeps away insincere people. They look at devotional service and say, I don't want that. I don't want to suffer. It's just crying all the time. But the devotees are actually, it heightens their attachment to Krishna. And Krishna says it himself in the Mahabharata, yasyahamana grinnami harishe tad tanam shanai. He said, when I really show my mercy to a devotee, I start taking away everything. I mean, think about it. You know, when is the time when you really take shelter of Krishna? It's when you're really destitute. And Kunti recognizes this. Janmai shvari shuta shivir edamanamadapuman naivarhat yadi datum vai tomukinchana gocharam. She said, if I'm intoxicated by my birth, my great opulence, my learning, or my beauty, all these things are kind of an intoxicant for the soul, making me think, I'm okay, I'm all set, I'm really okay. I'm actually pretty nice, you know. I look good too. And you know, these kind of intoxications, I can't chant with sincere feelings, but Kunti says, if the person who can chant sincerely is a kinchan. Kinchan means something. And akinchan means not something. I don't have anything. Nothing. I don't have anything. Nowhere to take shelter. But that's in that realm we take shelter of Krishna fully. So Krishna can give us that experience of great suffering. I'm completely helpless. And when we turn to Krishna in that mood, then we can actually, with sincere feeling, call to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Manasa Deho Geho Yokichumor. I don't own anything. I don't have anything. These relatives, they're not mine. They're yours, Krishna. This house, whatever house, that's yours. Whatever wealth I have, yours. He said, even myself isn't mine. I mean, think, well, I own this, you know. No, that belongs to you too, Krishna. This is actually the great nectar of life, is to fully surrender to Krishna. And so, yes, he does assist us, and therefore many people are afraid to worship Krishna. I've heard in some households that, we'll have Krishna, but we take out his flute. Because, whatever he plays it, and then we become attracted away, and, you know, we lose all our material impetus, or something like that. But, as we advance in devotional service, we may have this inkling deep in our heart, saying, I know I'm afraid of, you know, of that situation where I don't know what's going to happen, because I want to control everything. I want to be in control. I want to know that, you know, I got money in the bank and all these kinds of things. But Krishna can push us along and say, okay, but you want me, right? So here, try this, you know. And pushes in a situation, and Prabhupada gives himself as an example so often. He said, I had a plan to make money and use that to preach Krishna consciousness, because he said, my spiritual master ordered me to do this when I was 25. And he said, I was set to be as rich as Birla. I had worked, I was a manager in a big chemical company, and then I had my own company, and the astrologer said, yes, you should have been as rich as Birla. But somehow, he said, Krishna dismantled everything and forced me to come to your country, he said, with $7. And what does that feel like? Leaving your country, your home country that you've always been in, with no connections anywhere, and no idea what's going to happen next, and no money. No money.
At the age of 70.
At the age of 70. I mean, you know, when I fly somewhere, I want to know who's picking me up and when, and what's their cell phone. I don't want to wait half an hour at the curb, you know. But if when you're flying into a place and it's way before anybody knows anybody, and there's no network, and you're just there. I mean, what does that feel like? And look at Krishna says, "Ye yathamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham." As they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So it's actually Krishna's special mercy when he takes away and he gives us some kind of misery. Hate to say it, but it's a fact. It's really a fact.
Well, I have a question connection to this.
Sure.
Now, since we have discussed so much here on this matter particularly, now, what is the fine line between knowing that the miseries that are coming is the karma, or is it the test that you are put into, wherein you have already surrendered to Krishna, but still you are getting all those miseries, so that possibly Krishna is waiting to give himself up to you. So how would we recognize those signs, and how would we know the exact distinction that it is not the karma, it's the advaya? How would we know? How would we realize that?
Well, I mean, in an overall view, we're all parts and parcels of Krishna, and we're all meant to be in the spiritual world and connected with him. So even in a really high up view, the karma that's going on in this material world is meant for everyone as an impetus to go back to Godhead and not stay in, you know, try to stay permanently in the material world. Krishna says, Samaham sarvabhuteshu name dveshasti nakriya. Ye bhajanti tamam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. He says that I'm equal to everyone. And Nakartritvam Nakarmani Lokasasujicha Prabhu. He says he isn't responsible for the karma that's going on in the living entity in the material world. Nakartritvam Nakarmani, I don't, you know, induce people to do the material thing and get the karma. He's not involved with that. And he also says, I'm equal. I'm equal pose. He doesn't intervene in that way. Because the material world is a just place. There's justice here.
Hare Krishna.
Don't you know the Jewish
No, this is very good.
Just talking right. The question on the floor is about what's the difference between real karma and Krishna's mercy and karma. And I would say that the material world is a place of justice. Karma is an equal and opposite reaction to things that we do. And that Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nakarti from the karma ni lokasasujita prabhu, that I don't get involved with the karma of the living entity. That's his own business. That his relationship with the material world, and Krishna's also saying, Samaham sarvabhuteshu, that I'm equal to all living entities. So, he's not involved in that side, but he says when somebody becomes a devotee, samaham sarvabhuteshu nam jyeshasti napriya ye bhajanti dhumam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham, then he says I show special favor to that person. So there's a difference, Prabhupada says, for somebody who's an orphan and someone who is the son of a rich man. Son of a rich man, although he may be estranged from the family, the father's always looking out to see, you know, where is he now? And, you know, the second he turns around, he'll, you know, he has somewhere to go. You know, in this sense, Prabhupada said that Krishna is our father. He said, but right now when we've taken shelter of the material world, Krishna is no longer our father. Maya becomes our father, so to speak. In other words, we've taken shelter of Maya by our choice. But when we turn to Krishna, even a little bit, then he begins to intervene in our life. And that's what he says. For the devotees, then I get involved. And in fact, there's a statement that if once one says, O Lord Ram, I take shelter of you, then from that day forward, that person becomes my ward, Lord Ramachandra says, and I always protect him, that devotee. So for those who have come to this devotional service and have surrendered even once and are going on that path, then Krishna begins to get involved. And in the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tatenu Kampam Susumikshamano Bunjana Evatma Kritam Vibhakam Ridbhagvapur Vir Vidadam Namaste Jiveta Yomukti Pade Sadayava, It's a very famous verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. The quintessential attitude of the devotee is expressed, and that is that I will endure whatever kinds of karma come to me because of my past activities. And I'll just endure it. I'll suffer whatever is meant to be suffered, all the time just praying and hoping for Krishna's special mercy upon me. And Lord Brahma, who spoke this verse, says such a person is eligible to go back to Godhead. They inherit the kingdom of God. The commentary of that verse, Srila Sridhar Swami says that when someone surrenders to Krishna, that someone may say, they're still suffering. So what is it that they're suffering? Is it karma or is it something else? And Srila Sridhar Swami says, it's something else. And that is that even after I surrender to Krishna, there will be vestiges, traces of the enjoying spirit that I'm leaving behind in the material world. And that Krishna is expert at knowing exactly what that enjoying spirit is. Everyone has some particular way of being attracted to the material world, a unique way of being attracted to the material world, some particular attraction. And Krishna knows what it is. Once you've given him permission, I surrender to you, Krishna, he says, okay, I'm going to intervene and I'm going to help. And therefore, Srila Sridhar Swami says that the kind of karma that you appear to get once you're a devotee is actually Krishna's arrangement to eradicate the last traces of your enjoying spirit in the material world, and he does it so expertly. And in fact, even someone who's asking Krishna for material benediction, satyam dishati satyatam artito nirnam, there's a verse in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that describes somebody's surrender to Krishna, but then they start asking for material things from him. He says that person may be a fool, but I'm not a fool. And therefore, I will fulfill his material desires, but I'll do it so expertly and in such a way that he or she will never ask me again for those things. And instead of giving those material things, I'll give myself. And I'll cover over that their desires for material enjoyment. I'll give them something better. So how to tell the difference is that you're a devotee. And that means that Krishna is involved. And we're not stranded. You have the Krishna's attention and you have the association of devotees, and you know, you have all that goodwill. You're not an orphan, so to speak. You know, you have a place to take shelter. Did that answer the question?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and that is why now I can relate to whatever the happenings are. Because he is definitely the image I have seen. If I ask something not accurately material in crude sense, like this, for the welfare of the family, he would not listen. So, I mean, that still is material, even if I am asking. Mm-hmm. So I have really stopped asking for anything from him, because he does provide. But the way you say that, you will never want to ask him again. That is what has been happening. So now that makes really the point really clear to me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. What else?
I really like the point you made about compassion. The devotee is more compassionate, even though he's risen above all those material qualities or material requirements, yet he's more compassionate than the material person.
More capacity, and also understands what it really is. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. More reflections? Anything you heard that stuck? Or a question?
Yeah, Prabhu, how come we, you know, when you're talking about ultimately Krishna's acting in such a way, could you elaborate a little more on how there's karma, but then there's Krishna intervening? But how can we, with our limited perspective, learn to see and actually have faith that what he does is actually out of compassion for us and what's best for us? Sometimes in this world, the things that we experience seem rather harsh. Sometimes we can't understand, you know, like the classic theodicy debate, you know, how can there be so much pain and evil in the world if God is so good? So can you help us understand, how can we see like that and have faith in that higher perspective better?
Well, by having a higher perspective, in the beginning of the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's talking about various qualities that are possessed by the living entity, and he talks about happiness, and so Srila Prabhupada says that happiness, devotees are happy because they know they're going back to Godhead. They have this higher perspective. They have an overall perspective that they're going back to Godhead. Therefore, they're able to tolerate so many things that are going on in this world. Just today, when I was on the street with so many people, we showed them the changing bodies exhibit. And we say, here, look at this. See, we start here, we end here, we're just passing through. It's really quick, you know what I mean? And they look at it, and a lot of people are shocked. And whoa! I didn't think of it like that, because I'm just thinking that I'll live forever, basically. Devotees have another perspective that, you know, they're moving very quickly through this life. And Krishna says, Tesham satati yuktanam pachatam prikipurvatam dadami puri yogam tam yenam amupayanti te, that to those who are on the path, who are worshipping me with love, I give the understanding, I give them the intelligence so that they can come to me. And that's not insignificant. I mean, there is a way that the devotee communes with Krishna, which is the word Prabhupada uses there, because Krishna's there within the heart. And he reconfirms these things in different periods of our life. And even though I may be suffering, you know, and there may be, you know, upheaval in my life, Krishna's there within the heart to give us solace and give us intelligence about what's actually happening, and to remind us that we're going back home, back to Godhead. So a devotee personally will experience that because Krishna's there within the heart. It's not necessarily intellectual exercise, although that can be done also, just by analyzing that the material world's full of suffering and everyone's, you know, going through this, and that it's a temporary life and such. Many people are able to be stoic, you know, just by observing the nature of the world. But devotees especially are guided and reassured by Krishna from within the heart, that what they're doing and the path they're on is taking them back to Godhead. They can see that and understand it. And we see that when devotees leave their bodies, there are many experiences I've had and others have had that are recounted, seeing devotees who come to the point of death and aren't afraid or have profound experiences of connection to their spiritual master and to the spiritual world and such. You know, we can see practically these things happening. It's a very intangible thing, Krishna says, the death process, unless your eyes are trained in knowledge. If you're not trained in knowledge, then you can't see what's going on, and it's just a bewildering thing, why people are dying, or why people are getting certain kinds of karma. And it just seems random. And then people become angry, you know, and they just say, why do bad things happen to good people and such? But those whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see what's taking place. Krishna says. When somebody leaves their body, they understand what's happening when they leave their body. And for that matter, you know, they have an understanding that there are different varieties of planetary systems, and beyond this world there's a spiritual world and such. And that comes from hearing and revelation and having their solace in that, knowing who I am. This is sambandhagyan, or knowledge of my actual relationship with Krishna. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about in to Sanatana Goswami, that the beginning of spiritual life is reestablishing my relationship with Krishna. And these types of things are not easily explained to others, you know, in times of great disaster and things like that. Because, you know, people who just lost everything and they don't have that kind of perspective, their eyes aren't trained in knowledge, will be disturbed, greatly disturbed. And that's why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, learn to be undisturbed. And, you know, cultivate this knowledge and become dhira, undisturbed by the changes that take place. And also understand what's taking place when someone leaves their body. He says, you can see it. When you're trained in knowledge, you can see what's taking place. Shariram yadavat nodhiyat chat yukramatishvara. Tishvaraha, rihit vaitani samyati vayur gandam ivashayat. The soul is, you know, leaving the body by the force of consciousness, going from one body to the next. And then he says in the next verse that somebody whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see what's actually taking place. So, I guess my simple point is that because Krishna is in the heart, and because he's instructing us from without, by through the scripture and such, we can actually have revelation about what's taking place, and that I'm going back to Godhead, and we experience it for ourselves. What do you think?
Thank you.
Oh, do you think that holds water for you?
Yeah, no, it's very good. I was just maybe emphasize a little bit the first point you made about understanding our perspective on what our goal is. Because I was just thinking, just like a child, you know, I've got, you know, three grandchildren, and just, you know, oftentimes they're doing something that's harmful for themselves. So I've observed, you know, the parents intervene to try to teach them to stop doing something that's harmful to themselves or others. And at that moment, they're convinced it's the worst possible thing. You know, they're very upset, and, you know, the littler ones especially, you know, it's a traumatic experience for them. They want this, they're not getting this, and the whole world is going to hell because of it. And they're going to disrupt anything and everything they possibly can in the process. But, you know, from the parents' point of view, you know, it's all about learning.
Uh-huh.
It's all about learning something. But, you know, if we can step back from that perspective and that faith, and actually I'm learning something here. It's all about learning. Like you mentioned that Krishna said sometimes, you know, we may be determined we want something. So he says, I'll give it to you in a way that you won't want it anymore. So, you know, we think, okay, I'm learning. I meant to learn something here.
Mm-hmm.
Then with that perspective, then we won't be as disturbed or less disturbed. But if we're not thinking like that, you know, in every moment, it's like, oh, I want this. Why isn't it happening? And therefore, so much mental disturbance on top of everything else. But if that vision is there, just like a good athlete that coaches directly them in a particular way, they may not like the immediate problems and the obstacles and the challenges and the pain, but if they have faith and an experience that I'm actually learning, I'm growing through this experience, then, you know, like they say, they overplay it these days, but they say no pain, no gain. It really means they have experience that if you stretch yourself a little bit, you learn more, you benefit more. Mm-hmm. So it's not always easy, but if, you know, we step back and see, like that, as you said, we keep the goal in mind, then the day-to-day things, they don't affect us, they don't bother us, and when one's really advanced, those people see it all as, it's all good. because it's all about learning. You know, as a grandparent watching my 2-year-old grandson get really upset because his father wants to do something he shouldn't do, the son's totally upset. The father's trying to do the best he can. I'm just kind of sitting back watching, going, "This is a learning experience." You know, when he's 3, hopefully he doesn't have to do that again. But in the meantime, you know, his view is terrible.
Mm.
You know, the father has the wisdom, but he's trying to not get too caught up in the trauma so that he doesn't get upset. He just keeps focused on what the lesson is. You know, but like in a sense, the grandparent, you just think, oh yeah, I can see the whole drama. And then you think, okay, and Krishna's treating me the same way.
Mm.
Am I like the 2-year-old or the 30-year-old, or am I thinking like the 50 or 60-year-old? Mm. How am I responding?
Prabhupada told how one of his sons was trying to touch the fan on the table, and Prabhupada kept telling him not to get up and don't touch it, it's dangerous. And Prabhupada was with one of his friends, and he said, "Well, why don't you let him touch it? Just turn it down a little bit and let him have his own experience." And so he did that. Prabhupada said, "You know, I turned the fan down," and they said, "Okay, you're insisting on touching it, touch it." So he touched it, and then, but then he never touched it again. And he compared that to learning experience that Krishna gives us in this world, that I insist, I want something. Even a super soul, you know, he's neutral, but he gives us good instruction. He tells us what to do, but if I keep saying over and over again, "I want it, I want it, I want it," if I say, "Okay, I advise against it, but you can take it anyway. You know, you take the consequences." And then, and I thought of when you said that about the child, it's so appropriate. I had an amazing experience once with a bird that flew into our house. I was in the garden and I saw the bird fly in through the kitchen window, and I thought, "Bird in the house, not a good idea." So I ran in there and I thought, "Let me free this bird. I like birds." And, you know, I feed him out in the backyard and everything. And I felt compassion for him. But when he saw me, he looked me in the eye and I saw this look of terror. And he was saying, "You're going to kill me, right?" And I thought, no, I like birds. I'm not going to kill you. I want to let you out. So I opened all the windows in the kitchen. And in a terror, he flew into the next room. And I opened all the windows there. And a Terry flew in the next room. He ran the whole house until he finally got all the way back to the kitchen, and he flew out thinking, you know, "He almost killed me." when he looked at me with that look of terror in his eyes, I was thinking, that's me, and there's Krishna opening windows for me, you know, and saying, "Yeah, you don't need all this other stuff. Just go out the window. I'll get you free." And I'm going like, no, leave me alone. Like, it reminded me of that. Because it was a direct experience, and those are always potent. Mm-hmm.